Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And as you know, each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com. That's annliguori.com. And distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Well, this morning I share with you interviews I did with four personalities in the world of golf, each all very accomplished in their own right. We begin with Gemma Dryburgh. She's a delightful professional from Scotland. She plays both on the LPGA Tour and the European Ladies Tour. And Gemma's very first win on tour came in 2022 in Japan at the Toto Japan Classic. Now, what did she win along with the top prize money? She was awarded a tourlet. Yes, that's right, a tourlet. Toto, the sponsor of this tournament in Japan, they manufacture ultra plush, not flush, tourlets, although they do flush. And Gemma loved every second of this prize, and she shares her story. Alcide Deschenes is a mechanical engineer who developed a training tool called the One Club. And his late brother Jimmy actually invented this tool. And sadly, Jimmy passed away from complications associated with MS. But Alcide honors his memory by manufacturing this tool and distributing it, helping golfers improve with this training device. And speaking of training, top golf instructor Martin Chuck, a PGA golf professional, he has designed several training aids to help his students improve their swings. Learn how Martin stays ahead of the competitive field of golf training devices. And Sherry Steinhauer, former star on the LPGA Tour. She won two major titles and a variety of LPGA Tour events. Well, she has a new passion. In fact, it seems as if the entire country is enamored with the sport of pickleball. Hear why Sherry, after a very successful golf career, is now addicted to pickleball and why she thinks this sport has taken the country by storm. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Gemma Dryburgh. Gemma here at the HGV Tournament of Champions. It's so great to connect. She's Scottish, a Scottish lass from Aberdeen, and this is the first time we've actually spoken, so I'm delighted to meet you.
Yeah, no, thanks for speaking to me. It's so great to meet you.
So 7 years on the LPGA Tour, you went to the IMG Academy. So you're like an American. You went to Tulane, correct? So you've been here for a long time. You were 15 when you went to IMG.
Yeah, no, I've been here a long time. And even before that, my parents and I used to come over to Florida for vacations and stuff. So I know Florida well, so it's good to be back. But yeah, went to IMG for 2.5 years and then Tulane for 4 years. So I'm actually living in New Orleans now again after, you know, a bit of a hiatus, went back home for a bit, but back in New Orleans now. But yeah, very comfortable over here in America, but obviously, you know, miss Scotland. We always get to go back in the summer, which is nice.
You are from the birthplace of golf, Scotland. When anybody thinks of golf and the origins, obviously St. Andrews. Tell me about what it was like growing up in Scotland and how old you were when you got exposed to the game.
Yeah, I mean, golf's everywhere in Scotland. It's very accessible there. I was probably 4 years old when I started hitting balls with my dad, and we always used to go out whenever we could and just, you know, fell in love with it. I did play other sports growing up, but golf was always a constant in my life, and dad's a huge golfer. So, you know, golf's everywhere there. It's everywhere you look. There's a golf course, you know, not even the famous ones. There's some amazing golf courses that are, you know, not as well known that are fantastic to play. So it's great to be, you know, from there and, you know, growing up going to St. Andrews quite a bit, and very lucky to have those experiences and, you know, play in the summer with all the, when I got into the Scottish amateur team and, you know, playing all those events over, you know, amazing courses. So yeah, very, very lucky.
Golf is so accessible in Scotland and Ireland. Kids just play golf when they're very young, right? They just take to it.
Yeah, no, it's very accessible. It's, you know, done in schools as well. And, you know, it's very, you know, very cheap to play, really. You know, a municipal course, you can play very cheaply. And, you know, it's good for families to get into as well. So, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, continue now in Scotland. So, yeah, I'm proud of that, you know, being from Scotland myself.
And what are some of your favorite golf courses over there? Obviously, so many. You go to one links course and it's just incredible. You think it's the most beautiful links course in the world, and 10 minutes down the road, there's another one, right? Yeah. So what are some of your favorite links courses in Scotland?
Scotland, yeah. So, I mean, I was very lucky to play, you know, the British Open at Carnoustie and Troon. They're definitely up there and one of my favorites. Carnoustie has a warm place in my heart because my dad's family, my grandparents used to live in Carnoustie. So I used to grow up going there, and dad used to be a member, and played reasonably well when I played the Open there, and then actually played the British Am there as well, but it kicked my butt that time. But yeah, it's you know, great going back to those courses. But, you know, there's loads that are, you know, not as well known, you know, Scotts Craig, Blair Gowrie, just to name a few. But yeah, just some amazing courses there.
And of course, the conditions can be very, very windy and rainy at times. When did you notice that those growing up in Scotland in those conditions, did that help you when you came to the United States and played here? Because you're so used to playing in just really crazy conditions over there sometimes.
Yeah, I think it helps with kind of, you know, dealing with adversity, you know, playing in conditions, you know, when it's windy, rainy, cold, and you just got to go out there. You don't have a choice. So I think it does, you know, build you up in those moments where maybe even when it's nice weather, when things aren't going your way, you can kind of just push through and, you know, keep going. I think that's kind of built up. And, you know, when I was young, all through my, you know, junior career and everything, I think it has helped me in my professional career. Definitely. When times are maybe not quite going so well, that's the times that you need to push through and, you know, just keep going. So I think it's definitely helped me in my career. And I'm glad to say I don't play in as many bad days as that now, which is nice. But, you know, I'll be prepared for it when it happens.
But in Scotland, you would play in a lot of wind and a lot of rain. You'd think nothing of it, right?
Yeah, no, it's very common, especially the wind. You know, it's pretty windy most days. And then, you know, obviously when it rains as well, it's even a double whammy. So, yeah, we've played in a lot of it. And, you know, played some amateur golf in some pretty grim conditions when my parents have been, you know, like, oh, should we send our daughter out in that? But, you know, off we went. And yeah, you just get on with it. So yeah,
I love it. So are you from a whole family of golfers? Does your mother play as well?
Mum can play. She doesn't choose to play very often, but she enjoys watching me. And whenever my dad and I play, she usually walks along. But yeah, she never got the bug. But you know, I think she has potential.
There's still time. There's always time in golf, right? Yeah. So 7 years, Gemma, on the LPGA Tour, and you have your first win in 2022 at the Japan Classic. Talk about what that experience was like.
Yeah, incredible. It's definitely a highlight of my career so far. You know, getting my first win, it was a dream of mine since I can remember. You know, even when I got on the tour, it was, you know, it would be a dream to win one day. And just gradually got better each year, and you know, finally became, you know, winner on the LPGA in Japan, of all places. You know, amazing country and people, and very privileged to have won there and gone back to defend last year. And they're just so welcoming, and you know, it's a very special place. But yeah, it was incredible. I just played so well. You know, I was, you know, it felt like the hole was like a bucket, which was a great feeling. Just kind of in the zone all four rounds, and that's kind of the mindset you want to try to get into every round if you can. But yeah, incredible feeling.
Isn't that wild when you say the hole looked like a bucket, you were in the zone? Describe how tough that is in golf to be in that zone four straight days. I mean, you can get it. It comes and goes. But to have that feeling for four straight days, that's just incredible.
Yeah, an incredible feeling. It's kind of what you strive for, but it's very hard to do. And I think the key is to not be frustrated if you can't get in that zone, because then you're never going to get in that frame of mind. So, you know, I try to just kind of focus on one swing thought usually. And I do a lot of focus on my breathing, which helps me a lot when I get nervous. And I did that a lot when I was in Japan. Visualization as well helps me a lot. And so I was kind of very prepared for those rounds, especially coming into the last day when I was in the final group. And I'd obviously been in that position once before the previous year in Portland, and that I didn't really handle it that well. So I think that experience of being in that position before and maybe not handling it the best, I think actually helped me for when I then got in that position again.
Interesting. So you took that experience from the year before. Japan is golf crazy, right? Talk about the crowds over there. They love women's golf.
Yeah, they do. It's probably some of the biggest crowds we play in all year. Japan and Korea, they're just golf mad over there. So enthusiastic, and you know, they're very knowledgeable as well about the game, and they just love it. So it's great to go back there, and just the buzz you get from playing in those crowds. You know, playing the Solheim obviously this past year for the first time, that's probably the most enthusiastic crowds and the loudest crowds I've ever played in. But before that, it would be Japan. Just love playing there, and just the buzz you get from playing, you know, in front of those people.
And the prize you got, of course, you got a nice check.
Yes.
But talk about, it's the most unique award in all of golf, I think.
Yeah, so the tournament is sponsored by Toto, the bathroom toilet company. So, I won a Toto Neo Rest toilet. So it's one of those toilets that the lid opens up for you, flushes for you, warm seat, all the jazz. So I haven't actually bought a house yet, so it's still on hold. So I'm hoping to buy a house soon and can get the toilet installed.
So this toilet does everything but go.
Yes.
For you.
Yeah, it can probably sing for you, put some music on for you just to, you know, make you comfortable. So yeah, it does everything, which very exciting.
That must have been, how did you react when you got the award? That must have been quite the moment.
Yeah, so they had the toilet on show all week, and we all were kind of saying like, oh, the winner of this week gets a toilet. So we're all kind of conscious of that. And then when I actually won, I was like, oh my gosh, I've won a toilet. So as you can imagine, the media ate it up, and it's quite a cool story.
It is a really cool story, and you have a great sense of humor for it, and so you're perfect for it, right? So 7 years on the LPGA, you've seen a lot of growth in women's professional golf. Talk a little bit about that. How has it emerged, the LPGA Tour, since you started playing professionally?
Yeah, it's grown massively, especially, you know, our prize funds, particularly the majors, have gone up, tenfold. It's been great to see the growth and, more fans in the game as well. And even just the depth generally of the game as well has grown so much. 100th place last year on the, the point out, when I first started in 2018, was a great player. But even now it's like, you have to have a really good season to finish 100, to keep your card. So it's getting better and better each year. You know, it's filtering down to the college game and the junior game as well. So just everyone's getting so much better. And, the prize funds are continuing to increase. We'd obviously like to see some more growth in that, but we're going in the right direction.
So because there's so much more depth in the women's game, obviously they're starting younger, more and more girls are playing at a young age, they're getting coached, it's a serious thing now for girls. It has been for a while, but more so now you can probably see the difference. Does that affect you and the way you approach the game now with all the depth in the women's game?
I think it does encourage you to, keep working hard, the girls out here, if you kind of miss a step, it's like, okay, you're gonna see a difference, and you just have to keep improving and keep, doing your best to work hard in your game, and definitely keeps you on it for sure. You can't really rest too, we need our rest every now and then, but you can't, rest on your laurels, as they say, because everyone's just so good.
What do you think you've learned the most through the years, just looking back, 7 years ago to now? What have you learned the most about yourself?
Well, I think when I first came on tour my rookie year, I really struggled. And I think I was looking at other people and maybe comparing myself to others. And, I think I've learned just to stick to my own game and focus on what I'm good at. So I'm not the longest player on tour, but I've kind of, make it up in other parts of my game, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of focus these days on length, but You know, you can do other things with your game to improve and compete out here. So I think just focusing on my game and doing things that are, you know, work for me. I think that's been key, and I think, you know, learned a lot of that the last couple of years.
What do you think is the best part of your game? Your short game, your putting?
Short game, I would say, kind of, you know, up and downs. Putting's improved a lot. Still room for improvement always. But yeah, I'd say my short game's improved a lot over the last couple of years. It's been kind of the difference, I think, you know, maybe when I'm not having such a good ball striking day, you know, I can make it up with, you know, my short game and make... My worst rounds are, you know, more around par than they used to be. You know, when I first came on tour, a bad round might be 4 or 5 over, and that's hard to come back from, you know, from that. So I think my game and my scoring's kind of come in from that, and I think that's been a big key.
I love that. And you've been playing with a long, dear friend of mine, Hallie Ledbetter, who I just found out today that you both were at IMG together. What was that like?
Yeah, so we're very good friends from IMG from when we were about 15 years old. And, you know, obviously that relationship's grown since then. But yeah, we were very close in high school, and it's just play with her today. And it was pretty cool because, you know, we haven't played with each other much in the last few years. But, you know, we used to play a lot when we were in high school. You know, we're in the same golf group. We had the same coach as well. So we played a lot of golf together. But it's been a few years now, and now just to play in an LPGA event together is pretty special.
Did that help you relax out there, because you guys know each other and you were probably having more fun than anything, right?
No, I think so. I think, you know, we've got good banter, good chat the whole round. So, you know, obviously encouraging each other every hole. And it's great to see her, you know, play so well. It's obviously not easy out there. You know, she doesn't get to play as much as she used to. So, you know, back to where she grew up at Lake Nona and stuff. But yeah, it was very cool to be out there with her.
I shared this with you earlier, that Hallie did a story on me years ago. I met her at Shinnecock and a member guest, and I said, okay, if you want to send me the story, I can edit it for you, which I did. And all these years later, she's done so well in her broadcasting career and as an independent host and producer now. And she must be so proud of you, too. I know you're proud of her.
Yeah, it kind of goes vice versa. It's amazing to see what she's done in her career, where she's come from and where she is now. And I just can see her career just, you know, going even further. You know, she's got so much talent, and, you know, she loves golf, and, you know, she's always been very funny. I think she's in a perfect space for her, you know, and I can't wait to see what she does next. And, you know, I'm sure it's been great for her to see me, you know, on the LPGA as well. So, yeah, it's a very cool friendship.
Well, looking ahead to this year, it's early in 2024. What would be a perfect year for you as far as, I'm sure you set, do you set goals for yourself before the year starts? Do you write any goals down?
Yeah, I do. You know, there's a couple highlights this year that I would like to do. It's, you know, the Women's Opens at the St. Andrews this year. So that's definitely on the highlight list.
Wearing a St. Andrews hat.
Yeah, I'm sponsored by the Old Course Hotel, so I'll be staying there. So just walk out my room to the practice area, and but yeah, so excited for that. You know, it'd be a dream come true to win there. You know, just to win a major, never mind playing at St. Andrews. So and then, you know, to make the Solheim Cup team again this year in September, that's a big goal of mine. And then, you know, maybe the Olympic team. You never know. You know, it's only 2 spots for the Team GB, so that would be another dream.
And St. Andrews, how many times have you played the Old Course?
Well, you know what? I only actually played the Old Course once. I've played the courses around there quite a few times. So hoping to get there before they open this year for another practice round and have a look around. But obviously know it quite well. I've been to watch a few opens there for the men, and you know, been in the town quite a lot. So I do know it. But yeah, excited to play it again.
It's a very special place. But with you being from Scotland and obviously endorsing now the Old Course Hotel, great hotel, by the way, I stayed there years ago, do you think you'll feel a lot of expectation, a lot more than normal, to do well there?
Well, I think I'm conscious of that, because I know when I go back to Scotland in general, I do feel a bit more pressure, even just playing the Scottish Open. So you know, having done that a few years now, I know just not to put too much pressure on myself, and at the end of the day, it's just another tournament, even though it obviously means a lot more to me. I'll have family there watching, and obviously I want to do well for them, but at the end of the day, they're going to love me whatever happens, and I'm still going to enjoy it whatever happens as well. So I think that's the main thing.
And last question, Gemma, what has been the secret to your success, do you think, so far?
I think just improving each and every year. I think that's been my goal ever since, you know, when I lost my card my rookie year. I was like, you know, how do I improve from this year to the next? And I think I've gradually done that every year. You know, ever since I was a junior, I think my dad's kind of instilled that in me just to, you know, keep improving on bits of my game. And I think that's been the key.
Awesome. I love your sense of humor. I love your passion. Continued success. And thank you so much for joining us on Sports Interview.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it's my pleasure to say hello to Alcid Deschen, who is the developer of the One Club, which is a club performance training aid. And I've tried it. I practice with it. And I'm going to let you know how it improves my swing speed and my overall golf performance, but it certainly did for you. So tell me all about that.
So, I developed this with my brother, Jimmy, and we developed it in our basement. And when I first started, I was an amateur golfer, you know, maybe 6 months under my belt. And when we developed it in our garage, this is really interesting. And long story short, I started training with it. And within 2 weeks, I went from 105 to, let's say, 115. And then in a period of 2.5 months, I went to 105 to 128. And what I find, what it did, it taught me how, I was a good athlete, played many power sports, and I was able to produce a lot of energy, just that I couldn't put it into the club. And this taught me how to basically take all the energy I'm capable of producing and put it into the club.
So your background is as a mechanical engineer, correct?
Yeah, a mechanical engineer, and my brother was a physician.
And so what made you both kind of, you know, get together and design a performance training aid for golf?
Well, I would like to take credit that I did this, but I would say the brains was my brother. He was diagnosed with MS, but he was a high-level tennis player, very, very excellent scratch golfer. And he didn't want his performance to drop. So he's always looking at ways of maintaining his sports prowess. And so he would always invent things. And like I said, finally one day, one of his inventions, I was like, wow, this is truly incredible. So, and that's where it came from. So.
Yeah. And so you kind of took that and talk a little bit about your brother. You lost him when?
We lost him in 2011. So. Oh. Yeah, so it's been a while. So we developed this in 2000, I would say six when we first did it. And then we were looking at it, trying it out, testing it out with other golf pros. And we finally realized we were onto something. And then we started potentially working towards, you know, trying to market it. And then he got more ill and, you know, and then took a turn for the worse in 2011. And then I put it on hold. Just dealing with his loss was quite difficult. But I knew I wanted his idea to live on, and I knew it was a good idea. So I finally, I think 5 years ago, I said, okay, let me get the courage to do this. Tried selling it. No one was interested. Didn't validate it with anyone. And then I said, okay, saved up money, worked my butt off, saved up enough to manufacture in a local plastic producer. And then I went to the 2022 show and got it validated by some of the best in the business. And that gave me the courage to say, okay, this could work. And I move forward with it.
So if you can describe this to my radio audience, how would you best describe what this training device is?
So I'm going to try not to get too technical, but initially our concept, what we thought of was we looked at, there's this, a golf pro called Calvin Miyahara who developed golf, who had speed chains. And speed chains were a way of training. It's like an overspeed, underspeed type of training. This was back in 2005. And when you swing a chain, initially there's small links and it gets bigger links. So it allows you to generate high speeds and then have heavy weight at the end. And it said, and that was a big cumbersome thing, destroyed your grass. You couldn't train indoors. And then we were researching overspeed, underspeed training, which at that time was not popular, but we were looking at studies to see how we could develop speed and power. And we said, hey, you know, what's important in the golf swing, one of the main components in the swing is the moment of inertia and not necessarily the mass. Well, mass is important, but, you know, the moment could change. So we said, if we have a weight starting close to our hands, and then as we swing, it moves outwards, you know, you could generate the high speeds and then have the high muscle contractions and swing at a heavy weight when the weight's at the end. So what we decided to do is our brother took surgical tubing and heavy plumbing parts, put them on a golf shaft, and we started testing it out. And so the initial premise was, okay, we're going to get a plyometric workout. But in doing that, we realized, wow, this is phenomenal for feedback. And it just shows you how to release, and it gives you an instantaneous feedback and audible tactile feedback of where you're releasing and how you're releasing as you're training for speed and power. And that just proved to be the winning combination for us.
So you said you've some noted coaches in the golf industry are using it. Can you talk about how you connected with them and who in fact is using the device?
So in the previous show, I had the biggest proponents initially, which I really appreciate, was Terry Rolls, Mike Adams was the first person. And then when Mike Adams came, then Terry Rolls came, Jeff Smith came. Jeff Smith loves it. He gave me testimonials. Terry Rolls, again, uses it. He used it with Sung Yul No, a pro golfer. And in one session with force plates and with the one club, he increased Sung Yul No's swing speed around 12 miles per hour. I could be wrong on that, but it was around 12 miles per hour. And just teaching him proper mechanics and trying to teach him how to basically get all that power he's able to generate and have it released, because I believe he was releasing a bit late. I could be wrong on this. And he was teaching him how to, and he was leaving some of the speed on the table. And by releasing a little bit earlier with these guys, he was able to get all that power into the club head. But I have many PGA pros across the US right now that are loving the product. But one thing too, I was never certain, even though these guys like it, does the market like it? And the feedback I'm getting from my customers, from older golfers that are increasing, 65-year-old golfers that are increasing 10, 15 yards, which it's not an old habit to everybody, but you know, hearing those stories of how they're enjoying it, increasing their swing speed, and it makes them enjoy the game a bit more. So again, if I could help anyone out, I know golf is frustrating. If I could help anyone out with their game, you know, it's nice to know that I'm doing that.
It's such a great story, Sid. And, you know, obviously it takes so much time to get it in the hands of the right people. And as far as the amateur players, what's your recommendation about just practicing with it? What should your typical amateur golfer be doing before they hit the range to practice, you know, their golf swings? How should they be using this?
Well, you could use it two ways. You could use it just for timing and teaching release, and that you could use to warm up. It's a great way to get you into the groove of where your release point is and how you're swinging. The more you train with it, the more it ingrains the right movement patterns, right? But there's also speed training, and speed training doesn't come from, you know, not really working. You have to work to get faster. We also have a speed protocol, which we're coming out with, that is more extensive. If someone wants to work the various parts of their swing, we could do that. But at a minimum, it's just warming up with it, swinging it, getting your timing right, realizing what you're doing to get the club to click, because there's an audible tactile feedback with it. And that's enough.
Continued success. This is a really great story. And I will let you know in a couple of months how much better of a golfer I'm going to become.
I would love for you to come back and tell everyone you increased 10 miles per hour and your game is, you know, 5 handicap better. That'd be ideal.
Thanks so much, Austin. Continued success. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann LaGoria. And my guest is Martin Chuck, who is a top golf instructor in Arizona, ranked 7th nationally by Golf Digest. Welcome to the show, Martin, and congratulations on all your success.
Well, I appreciate you. It's great to be with you. Thanks.
Only 35 years of doing this, right?
I've been lucky to have some great mentors and started me young as a coach, and we've had a great time doing this.
So you've come with a number of training aids. You've actually developed over 13 training aids. Talk a little bit first about your background, and then I want to get into, you know, how do you come up with the ideas for all these different training aids?
Necessity is the mother of invention. So I had some great mentors growing up in Toronto. That's where I'm from. George Knudsen was my coach. Mo Norman was, this amazing golfing character that was around me that inspired me quite a bit. And then I've always had this feeling of how do I link this tactile feel so some golfer can learn something quicker. Selfishly, it was for me. But then when I became coaching, I'm like, hey, I see this opportunity of this player to learn this feeling. How can I maybe make them learn that faster? And that's where the kind of the training and development took place.
Do you have any kind of like biomechanical background or any, a lot of times people who get into the training aids or even designing golf clubs and whatnot are mechanical engineers.
So I have a degree in duct tape and toothpicks. So seriously, it's more about like I'd see a situation. I figured, how can I make that my garage? I spent a little time in Lowe's and Home Depot, no plug there, but I mean, just how can I create something? And then luckily, I've got an industrial designer buddy of mine who can actually take this crude thought I have and then bring it to reality. And nowadays with 3D printing and things, that can happen pretty quick.
So how'd you get into this crazy business?
So love of golf, played college golf. Like I said, I grew up in Toronto, played college golf in New Mexico State, played professionally for a few years. So, during that time, I always coached, always helped at a range back in Toronto when I was a kid from 16 on. And then, as a club pro, I just loved helping golfers get better. It's a way to make a few extra bucks, but it wasn't just that. It's like to see a golfer smile and hit it more solid. The drug of golf is solid contact. That is it. Score is second. I mean, I've had more people say, oh my gosh, I hit the best 7-iron way over the green out of bounds. It was amazing. I made an 8 though. I'm like, but they're excited about the great shot they hit. And I'm like, okay, well, let's figure out now your new distances are this, so you won't make that big score. Because I do coach a lot of routine and a lot of strategy. But honestly, golfers just want to hit it in the face more often and feel like they have confidence to be able to do that. And I like to give them that on my golf school. But also, show them how to play the game and score better too.
Right. So what's your key to success in teaching it? Obviously, I hear that you feel very fulfilled when you see somebody improving, an amateur golfer improving, but what would you say the key to your success is with coaching?
Being honest with people. If people, like a lot of people will come see me and they don't really want to hear the truth. I'll tell them, hey, you can always leave the way you came, or you can suffer with me a little bit. And I say suffer, we have to make a change. You got to be uncomfortable for a little bit. Something's going to feel different. The outcomes might not be right there immediately, but if I can kind of give them a little snack of what's to come and then another little bite and then another little bite, and then pretty soon we build this change that they feel, oh, I see where we're going with this. The path is better. The face is better. The low point's more consistent. Now all of a sudden they kind of buy in, and then you're on your way to a golfer that hits it better, has more fun.
A lot of people are opposed to totally changing their swings. Do you try to do that when necessary, or will you kind of try to work with somebody's natural athletic ability and go from there?
So there's a couple ways of doing it. So like nowadays, modern technology, I always say I build an argument. So my argument is, hey, this is your club path. It's too wipey. Like I, hit a slice and there's not enough force on the golf ball. So if we can manage that club path and get a bit more direct in line with the target, you'll hit it farther. So I create little arguments. I prove my arguments so that they can see it data-wise with either a launch monitor or a 3D machine called Gears Golf that I use, other things I use to help create my argument. And then I make them have the buy-in. So when they see the opportunity, it seems like it's their decision, even though I'm steering them that way. So if they have their buy-in and they feel like, okay, that's a good idea, now they're more likely to want to go down the road of a little bit of pain for a lot of gain. So that's how I do it.
A lot of psychology used.
Oh man, I'll tell you what, like there could be a big leather couch in my studio at the Raven. Make yourself comfortable. Would you like a blanket before your lesson? Let's lie down and talk about this for a little bit, right? So there is, yeah.
So the Tour Striker Golf Academy, tell me a little bit about that.
So we have a lot of fun. We have a camp that runs from the 1st of November to the 1st of May in Phoenix. Every week we have 15 campers, me and my team of awesome coaches. We have a blast with people. I always joke with them. I say, hey, listen, I don't have to be nice to you. I'm not your club pro. I'm be truthful with you. And we laugh and and I say, you're going to suffer with me for 3 days. But I think people want the truth and then they want a game plan. And so that's what we do. And then when they're done, they're not really done. They have a means to stay in touch with us via this online app. They can post their swings and we get back to them. And then in the summer, we take our act on the road. We go to a lot of neat resorts and people join us at those. We have fun. It's a good time. It's fun first, educational, supportive. And then they have a way to check back in so that they're getting better.
And tell me a little bit about some of these products that you've developed. How do you, I guess you have an array of products, so everything is a little different from one another, or do they pretty much do all the same thing? Or tell me about your products.
So originally back, came here in 2009 with what was called the Tour Striker Training Club. It was a, most people saw an infomercial that was successful in the Golf Channel back in the day. And then it's kind of, it's more from there. Like if you've ever watched the tour range nowadays, you see guys with this lanyard, or ladies with a lanyard on and this black inflatable ball between their forearms. I call that the Tour Striker Smart Ball, just a silly name I gave it, because if you can manage your arms, you can manage your wrists. And then you're looking at what we call the Educator. The Educator is a wrist training device, kind of like an elaborate coat hanger that people can press against their wrist to feel how a wrist can hinge, unhinge, and bone flex, and some of the important things about how that condition can help the club face be organized so you can have a reliable contact.
I love it. So you take it on the road. They're easy to travel with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and then, you know, we have one of the things now, it's just a fancy rope. I know that sounds crazy, but, and you'd be amazed if I give somebody a folded rope and say, hey, swing it. And this is the oldest training aid since a Scottish guy ate a haggis in whatever year. They can't swing a rope. They don't have the sense of creating momentum and energy in an inclined circle. So you teach somebody how to swing a rope. Well, nowadays, I mean, you could technically wrap paper around your feet and call it shoes, but we have a, you know, a nice grip, a expandable rubber rope that people have this sense of expansion and rhythm with. And so we just create little better mouse traps, and then it can travel. If you can't golf, you can keep it in your roller bag and swing it wherever you want to swing it in any hotel room around the country.
You've been at this for a long time, Martin, Chuck, and I'm sure you've seen so many new and different training devices. How do you stay above all the clutter in that market?
You know, I think that I spend so much time on the range with people that, you know, I it's to me, certain things are too complicated for many. None of my things have batteries. Nothing has a battery. Okay. So it's like very simple. Oh, I get it. They have these little moments, epiphanies, and then they can have those sensations and hopefully take those positive feelings into their golf swings and develop and have more fun playing golf.
What's the best part of your job?
Making people smile, hitting better shots, teasing them, having a good time. That's the best part.
Every day is different.
Every day is different.
How's your game?
My game's okay. I mean, I wish I played more. I guess I could make time to. I'm going to play in the Arizona Senior Championship in May, so that'll give me something to look forward to and actually practice for a little bit. I play with my wife on Sundays from time to time. So my son's a good golfer. I have fun with him, so we have a good time.
Such a pleasure to meet you. Continued success. And ever get out to the east end of Long Island, I could use your help.
I will one of these days. It'll be a pleasure. Thanks, Ann.
Thanks so much, Martin, Chuck. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann LaGoria, and it is my delight to say hello to former LPGA two-time major champion, Sherry Steinhauer. Sherry, what a delight to see you again. It's been a while, but we're at the PGA Merchandise Show here in Orlando, Florida. Back to your golf roots, right? But with a different sport. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
So I remember your career. I mean, you won two major titles back in 92, 2006, three British Opens. You retired in 2012 and joined the Senior Tour. And now you're going to come back on the Senior Tour. But a lot has kind of happened in between. And the sport is called pickleball. The popularity of pickleball is just off the charts. How did you go from golf to pickleball?
Well, actually, one my good friend from college, Lisa DiPaolo, she said, as I was still playing on the Senior Tour, she said, you got to try this sport, pickleball. And I said, I'm playing golf, not now. And about 2016, I was kind of winding down a little bit from golf. And I said, let me try this, Lisa. And we went out and we played and I fell in love with it. We entered a tournament. We thought we had the game down. We entered a tournament, and we had to play these two very nice ladies, much older than us. And we were like, oh, come on. Well, they kicked us. They beat us so badly. And it was from that day on, I said, there's more to this game than just hitting the ball. There's a lot of strategy and all behind it. And I kind of became a student of the game, trying to learn how to play it and play it correctly. And I've just had a blast learning the game.
Talk about the fitness level of pickleball. It is a workout.
it's definitely a workout. I have a singles is really tiring. I'm retired from that after 1 year. So I just play doubles, but it's a great workout. And that's another reason why I like to play it, because I'm not playing golf as much as I used to. And I actually took a 7-year hiatus from the game of golf, and I used pickleball as my fitness.
Wow. Were you a tennis player?
No, not at all. No, no racket sports. So, yeah.
I know a lot of tennis players will actually convert to pickleball, but from golf to pickleball, how tough was that for you to kind of make that transition?
I grew up, I have 4 older brothers, and so I did all kinds of sports, and so I felt like I obviously, when I first started out, I didn't have any backhand in the game, and there were a lot of the strokes I had to learn and all. But I bought a ball machine and really dug in and just learned the game by drilling and practicing and there's still so much more for me to learn. I mean, you can take it as far as you want, and I try to take it as far. But I'd have to spend hours and hours and hours, and I'm not quite doing that. But I do study it. I watch it on YouTube, and I study the ins and outs of the game. I watch the strokes, and I try to emulate. The transition's just been a big learning curve.
Wow, I didn't realize there was as much strategy as it seems like there is, as you're articulating in pickleball. Is that a big part of singles and doubles, or more doubles, would you say?
Definitely in both. They're very, very different games. But to be honest, when I first started playing this sport, the court is like 20 feet wide by 44 feet long. And I thought, how hard can this be? I play on a golf course with different conditions, different golf course, different grass, everything's, and all kinds of different shots. But come to find out, there is a lot more to the game of pickleball than you'd ever imagine if you want to learn how to be proficient at it and take it to another level. And that's, I love that part of it. I love learning that side of the game.
See, my background is tennis. Uh-huh. So I'm interested, I see all these tennis players in my area in East End of Long Island that are now just addicted to pickleball. What do you think, the reason is for that, going from tennis to pickleball?
Well, after talking with tennis players, I hear that it's a much faster sport than tennis. It's very social. People love that aspect of it. So I think the quickness of it and the hand speed up at the net, I think tennis players enjoy. I think that also that they can learn the sport. Tennis players have a big advantage, and they come in and they're head and shoulders above most of the people right off the bat. You can always tell a tennis player when they come into the sport, but the tennis player has to learn how to slow it down. They have to learn different. They have to learn how to reset the ball and slow the ball down. And that's the hardest thing for tennis players to pick up. But they just love, tennis players love that, driving it and hitting it hard, because they see that they can and they have the technique. So it's a really easy transition from tennis to pickleball. And there's just, it's very social. You meet a lot of people and it's really, I think that's why it's so addictive too.
How about for golfers? Is there anything that you can really bring from your golf game to pickleball? Or was it like a totally new learning curve for you?
People ask me this question all the time and I struggle. I go, what is the same? I'm hitting a moving ball versus a stationary ball. I have no reaction time. I can golf, I can stand over it as long as I want. The ball's moving, coming at me quick. The only similarities that I really see are the mental aspect of the game, but that's really in any sport. So just with the racket or the paddle, it's different. There's not many similarities in my mind with it.
And maybe that's one of the reasons why you like it, because it's a totally different experience. I mean, as you say in golf, but everybody's like, how can hitting a stationary ball be so difficult? people don't realize who haven't played golf how tough it is to be a good golfer and to be a consistent, to hit a consistently good shot day in and day out. You know, and it's so difficult. Now that you're playing pickleball, do you think it's as difficult as golf, or can you still say that golf is probably one of the hardest sports ever?
Definitely golf is difficult. It's all between the ears, and you get to stand over the ball as long as you want. Whatever's going on in your head is going to dictate how well you're going to hit that shot. And some people have more active minds than others. When you look at the pros, they're all out there. They're all just as nervous as you are playing in the club championship. But they got mental toughness that's unmatched. And to be able to perform under pressure, that's the key to golf. For example, I went to a teacher and he taught me a swing that I hit the ball like the most solid I'd ever hit it in my life. And I went to a tournament and I played the worst I've ever played because I couldn't pull that swing off under pressure. And I ended up going to Manuel Della Torre, who was a very natural teacher of the golf swing. And when I learned the way he taught, set the club in motion, let your body respond to emotion is basically all it is. But I could do that under pressure. And that's the key, is finding out what you can do under pressure with golf. In pickleball, you're reacting. You know, you're reacting to a ball, yet you got to have the strokes. You got to learn. It's very different in tennis in that in pickleball, you have to have very short strokes. Tennis, you have long strokes. So you have to learn those types of techniques. But when the ball's coming at you quicker, it's a little bit easier to react than waiting, having your mind having to wait for a golf shot and thinking about all the outside agencies and what all goes into a golf shot. So they're very different in that way. But golf's a tough sport.
Certainly the mental strategies and the confidence that you built just compiling this incredible record on the LPGA tour. And that has to carry over a little bit to anything you do in sport, right?
I think so. I think I'd like to think that I have a tougher mental mind when I play pickleball, and you know, I'm lucky. I represent. I'm on the Selkirk team, and they have amazing equipment. So I'm lucky. I play really the best equipment out there, and so that helps. Just like in golf, having the best clubs. I play ping golf clubs, and I like to think they're the best, but that's actually why I got back into golf. I came here last year. Selkirk invited me here for pickleball. And I went over and I represented Ping on the tour for 25 years. And I went over to the Ping booth and I ran into Mr. John Soheim, the CEO of Ping, and was talking with him. He asked me what I was doing, and I said that I'm thinking about getting back into golf. And he said, you get over to the factory, we're going to set you up. And I'm set up with all the latest equipment, and it has made it so much fun. It's amazing in 7 years how much the equipment has changed. So I'm really excited with my new set of clubs and working and just trying to hit some shots like I used to.
I want to get into that senior tour in a second because you're going to resume your competitive spirit in golf on the senior tour, you told me. But we're at the PGA show. The fact that pickleball is here is fascinating to me. And it's been here for a number of years already. So, and I know that Selkirk Sport leads the pickleball programming here at the show. And they're one of your sponsors, as you mentioned. So are you surprised that, pickleball is here at a golf show?
Absolutely. If you would have told me, I used to come here to the PGA show when I was on tour for different companies that I represented. And if you would have told me back then that I was going to be at the PGA show, a company was going to bring me in and it was going to have nothing to do with golf, I would have wondered what you were talking about. So it's just amazing that I'm back here now and I'm here for pickleball and I get to see so many of my friends and so many people. But I think it just shows that the growth of the sport, pickleball is, you know, it's the fastest growing sport. One thing that's very interesting is that Selkirk has partnered with Troon, and Troon manages over, you know, 600 properties around the world. So anytime you go into a Troon property, you're going to see Selkirk equipment in their shops. And it just goes to show what the growth that pickleball has become.
Right. And of course, a lot of golf properties all over the country, you now see pickleball courts. Which is interesting because it gives you not only the tennis opportunities, but the pickleball opportunities and the golf. You mentioned ping. I have to tell you this great story. Years ago, like way a long time ago, you know, I'm old, but I was playing the JAL Big Apple Classic in one of their celebrity tournaments at Waikiki. Remember that tournament?
I won it.
Okay, then you really remember that.
98 or 99.
Oh, my God. That's probably where we originally met, right? So, anyway, I was playing in that event, and Louise Solheim was in my group.
Oh, my God.
And she didn't really play a lot of golf, but she was so sweet and such a lady. And I was so just taken with her. And 2 days later, I had a brand new set of pings sent to my house with my name engraved on them. And to this day, I don't want to use them because I want to just look at them.
Yeah, they're just an amazing family. Karsten and Louise, dear, dear friends. They were just amazing people. And the story is incredible how he started with the putters in the garage and grew it into this huge business and top company now and just down to earth family. So I'm just so proud to be a part of such a good family tradition.
And I had my first and only hole in one about 2 years ago, and it was with my Ping 8-iron at Heathrow right in Northeast Orlando, and they sent me a beautiful certificate. They were so thrilled when I told them I had a hole in one. So I have some good history with Ping as well, Sherry. Well, continued success. Tell me a little bit. You're going to play some senior tournaments again in golf?
I am. We have my next one up is the Senior LPGA Championship the end of May, which will be in Utah. So I'll play that. And I did undergo some hip replacement surgery last summer in July. I was having troubles walking and playing. And in order to play in the Senior U.S. Open, that's the one event where we do have to walk. We don't get the carts. And I saw that last summer that wasn't going to happen when I started playing golf again. So I had the hip surgery, and I'm hoping to play the U.S. Open if my hip cooperates. So, yeah, and I'll be playing other events, whatever is on the Legends Tour schedule. So looking forward to it.
And I know a pickleball will keep you in shape for golf too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. It's always a treat to catch up with you. Sherry Steinhauer, now a pickleball player and continued success on the senior tour. Looking forward to seeing you out there.
Thank you, Anne. I really appreciate you having me. Been fun chatting.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Interview. As the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle once wrote, it is during our darkest moments that we must focus to see the light. Hope you see the sunshine every day. Be kind, be safe. And I'll talk with you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne LaGorrie.